Brian Lehrer on WNYC. For those of you raising sons, do you ever feel they're just not listening to you? All the hands just went up. I know, it's true with daughters too. Or that they're spending all their time online or playing video games. You ask them to do a chore and they, quote, forget. Or you ask how school was and you hardly get an answer. Or maybe you're a teacher of boys who has trouble getting the boys in your class interested in the work more than the girls. Well, a new book by clinical psychologist Dr. Adam Cox offers practical advice on how to overcome these communication barriers. In Cracking the Boy Code, How to Understand and Talk with Boys, Dr. Cox explains some things about how to talk with boys without coming off as condescending, how to physically project a welcoming attitude, the role that work plays in helping a boy understand himself, and more. Dr. Cox, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
And by way of background, you talk about your own experience of learning how to communicate with boys professionally, in which the movie Gladiator played a critical role. So how did Russell Crowe help you talk to boys?
Wow. I was trying to run social skills groups with boys in nearby schools, and I thought that this wouldn't be much of a transition from working with them individually. But I found quite the opposite was true, in that when I went out to the waiting room to greet these kids, their arms were folded, they were staring at the floor, and they were highly resistant to engaging. And I almost gave up the idea of trying to work with boys in these kinds of groups until one weekend I was watching TNT in the days when they showed the same movie Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And it was the first time I had seen Gladiator, and there was Russell Crowe in the role of Maximus in the opening scene of the film, and he was trying to rally the troops into battle to galvanize their focus and their courage, and he uses the credo, strength and honor, and it kind of ripples down through the line of troops. And I thought to myself as I was listening to that, that's exactly right. That's what I need to kind of get my guys going. I have to change how they feel about themselves if I want them to become full participants. And as I did that with kids, extending my fist and having them kind of push back against my fist with theirs, and we would both say strength and honor, I found that suddenly we went from being this group of kids who felt like the identified problem to being a group of kids who really felt that they were bonded and were somewhat kind of warriors together. And therein, Brian, is one of the great secrets of working with boys, which is that when we help them to connect with their ideal selves, then we get so much farther in whatever we're trying to accomplish.
And yet I'll bet a lot of parents and others out there hearing you say that are rolling their eyes and saying, really, we have to make boys feel like warriors before we can communicate with them on more mundane things like schoolwork and homework?
I mean, schoolwork and chores? I think that's a fair point. And so here's one thing is that, you know, by the way, Russell Crowe made that improvisation. That was like an ad lib almost that he made up on the day that Ridley Scott shot that scene in Gladiator. But he had learned that at Sydney Boys High School, and that was the motto that the head of school used. So it is a very powerful message for boys. The way I define it with boys is the strength to do what's right, the honor to do it well. And honor, you know, in 25 years of doing psychotherapy with boys, I believe that love and honor are the two most under-discussed issues in boys' lives. And so it's good to bring honor into kids' lives and to kind of give them a sense of where that has gravity and where it has relevance. So it's not the idea that we're trying to create this, you know, paramilitary group or something like that. It's more that we're kind of targeting boys' desire to feel confident, to feel strong, to feel capable, to do things that are going to garner admiration. That's their ideal self. When we help them connect with those things, we get closer to them.
And you write in the book things like, many boys are left hemisphere thinkers in a right hemisphere world, and that boys think in basic categories like who's in charge and who's the subordinate. People are already thinking, oh, that's extremely Trumpian. So is this a male-female thing, or is this like an adolescent thing?
Well, there is a kind of gender thing. Imagine it this way, that if we say to, you know, the average adolescent boy, my dog died last week, what he hears is this: you had a dog, the dog died, this event happened last week. Just the facts. because most boys are processing language mostly over on the left side of their brain where we hear all the facts. But if they were using that right hemisphere as well, where we do all of our social perceptual work, they would have noticed the facial expression of the person that just said that, their eyes, their mouth, and they would have especially heard, Brian, the prosody of speech, the pitch, the rate, and the rhythm. And of course, when you hear all of those nonverbal cues, you get a more complete meaning of what was just said to you, and then you know how to respond accordingly. So I think that parents who want their kids to be people with, you know, what we call high emotional intelligence, we ought to be encouraging and recognizing that a lot of boys struggle with these right hemisphere skills.
And listeners, we have time for only a couple of questions for Adam Cox, clinical psychologist and author of Cracking the Boy Code, How to Understand and Talk with Boys. Any parents or teachers or anyone looking for a word of advice, 212-433 WNYC 212-433-9692. Another one is you suggest asking yes or no questions over open-ended ones. Why that particularly with boys?
Well, because when we ask open-ended questions, we unfortunately increase their anxiety and their sense of vulnerability. Very often, we misinterpret boys' lack of response to our inquiries as them being withholding or being defensive. And very often, it's the opposite. They're simply having having trouble with what we call in psychology working memory, is that their short-term memory is failing them, and so they can't think of what it is to say. If we ask a forced choice question, we at least give them some options, and it tends to move the conversation along with a little bit more energy and a little bit more, you know, information. So, you know, it's like the rungs on a ladder. We have something to grab onto. The second thing when we're asking those types of questions is to use what I call in the book task tone. That is the big key. When we get into big topics with boys before we have set the table with the right kind of tone, they unfortunately get lost in the anxiety and the confusion, and it's the tone. It's talking in a more matter-of-fact way. That's the way that we connect with that left hemisphere processing nature that so many boys have, is we use task tone. We are more matter-of-fact, more closed or forced choice kinds of questions, and it tends to build a little bit more relationship.
What if somebody asks, well, boys need to learn to answer those more complicated open-ended questions, not just the yes or no ones, and the only way to do that is to ask them those questions and not just cater to their yes-no predilections?
I couldn't agree with that that idea more than I do, Brian. And along those lines, I have often suggested to parents in various presentations that I've done that we can have conversations with boys that are about complex topics and involve a high level of subjectivity. It's just that we have to first set the table as a means of getting them to feel comfortable and ready to respond to those kinds of questions. So, you know, I am a strong believer. I spent 2 years traveling the world in a funded study talking to boys between the ages of 9 and 18 in many different countries and different continents, and talking with them about very serious issues. And this makes up all of the second half of the book where I talk about the important themes in boys' lives. So there is no question that boys want to talk about serious things, and they have a lot to say when we set the table the right way.
And with clinical psychologist Dr. Adam Cox, author of Cracking the Boy Code, How to Understand and Talk with Boys. Alex in West Orange, you're on WNYC. Hi, Alex.
Thank you for taking my call. So I have a boy, I have a girl. Why not use strength and honor with girls as well? I mean, I want my daughter also to be strong and to do what I think.
I think that's totally legitimate. There's no reason that you might not use strength and honor with girls. And I think that many of the strategies that I recommend in my book, parents would feel are also effective with girls. The way that my career has evolved is that I didn't set out to work with boys, but when I opened my practice, I found that people in my community were desperate for someone who was comfortable working with somewhat less communicative school-age boys. And so that's kind of how I've, you know, spent 25 years is understanding some of the ways of boys, you know, between the ages usually of 6 and 7 and their early 20s. And so you know, that's these strategies that I'm recommending are ones that I have found to be proven and effective with boys, but I think they can also be effective with girls.
Janine in Lyndhurst, you're on WNYC. Hi, Janine.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 17-year-old boy, junior in high school, who has that confidence in every other aspect of his life, but is a procrastinator when it comes to schoolwork. And I'm banging my head against a wall to try and figure out how to communicate the importance to him and get him to engage with me in a conversation as to why he's such a procrastinator.
I love that
Any
question.
Advice?
Yeah, the question is a great question. Many parents feel the same way. And I'm going to suggest to you that the primary problem socially that we see with adolescent boys that is totally undiscussed in our culture is a kind of existential despair. And by that I mean that by the time they've reached 15, 16, 17, they have lost a sense of why they're doing what they're doing. Many boys are going to school, and at that age they start asking themselves, even kids who are always good students, why do I do this? Why do I do this anymore? Where is this taking me? So I think the big problem, and I don't know your son, but I bet that a part of the problem when you have procrastination is that kids have lost a sense of the connection between the effort that they have to apply to schoolwork and how it is going to lead to a life of happiness. If you ask teenage boys their greatest fear about the future, they will tell you that it is, I'll end up in a job that makes me feel like someone I am not. So I think we ought to be having conversations with kids that relate schoolwork and the whole trajectory of life to where it is ultimately taking them.
Adam in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Adam.
Hi, I am a high school teacher in a school that is 75% boys of color. So I have a kind of a two-part question. One, since I teach seniors, do you think there's different ways of talking to boys that are really at the tail end of adolescence? And then the second question is, do you find that there's a different, you know, kind of messaging that needs to happen with boys of color versus, you know, boys of any other race or ethnicity?
Well, for the first part of your question, I certainly do feel like, you know, we have to use a different tone with kids who are getting older. One of the things that I recommend in my book is to always talk a little bit above a boy's age. And one of the reasons that I recommend that is that when we do that, there's a sense of seriousness and complexity to the conversation that is actually attractive to boys. I think they like it when they're being spoken to with a sense that, you know, we regard them as mature and we're conveying a signal of respect in the way that we do that. With respect to the second issue, absolutely as well. If we're not connecting with boys about the truth and the reality of their origins and their social roots, then we're not really speaking in a relevant way to them. So I don't see how we can have meaningful and productive conversations with kids without acknowledging aspects of their identity and aspects of their personal story.
Adam, thank you for your call. We've got time for maybe one more idea from the book. You encourage minimizing the vulnerability that boys feel while talking, since so much of this is trying to bring out uncommunicative boys. How tied into traditional notions of masculinity that they may be steeped in is the psychology of vulnerability?
Well, I think it's tied in. There's no question that, that there is this sense among boys that if they don't feel, you know, like they have some control of a situation, that they feel vulnerable and that ambiguity increases their anxiety. I think those things are true. And I would agree, I suspect, Brian, with most of your listeners, that we should help boys work past a sense of discomfort with those kinds of things. It's just that we first have to know how to make them comfortable and build a relationship before we begin to approach those kinds of things. So I think it's, you know, a question of not putting the cart before the horse, and I am certainly in favor of having kids that are more comfortable with their emotional complexity and more comfortable with the emotional complexity of other people. Yeah. I think that the two most under-discussed issues in psychotherapy are love and honor. And I've talked to you about honor, but we almost never talk to boys about love because we're afraid that it's a prelude to talking about sex, and we're generally uncomfortable in talking to kids about sex. Yeah. But we need to have conversations about love with kids.
Dr. Adam Cox, clinical psychologist, is the author now of Cracking the Boy Code, How to Understand and Talk with boys. Thank you so much for talking with us.
A pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.